Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, today is World Polio Day, a day that was dedicated to fight polio. We hear from the spokesperson of polio eradication at the World Health Organization.
In Africa, only Nigeria has cases of wild poliovirus, and that too, only 4 cases this year.
Also on the program, we will hear from children victimized in Nigeria allegedly for witchcraft.
When we get them, we report to the station, police station, and there we bring them to our center here.
And another segment of our ongoing drama series on crime fighters, a learning by ear production. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Today is World Polio Day. The day was first marked a decade ago to fight polio. Most African countries are now free of the disease, with the exception of Nigeria. The World Health Organization hopes this could be the last World Polio Day. The spokesperson for polio eradication at WHO, Shona Barry, told me about the progress made so far eradicating the disease.
As you know, 3 countries remain in the world that have polio: Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Nigeria. So all of Africa is polio-free, and most of Nigeria, I should add, is polio-free. Only a few districts in Nigeria, 3 districts, have reported polio. In parts of the country with weak health systems, with insecurity, this is an incredible challenge. But this isn't a challenge that we can't meet. We have met it before in Nigeria. We have met it before in many other countries with insecurity and weak health systems, some much weaker than Nigeria.
We know what causes polio, and there is a vaccine, of course, for it. Why has it proved then so difficult to eradicate it as compared to other diseases that sprout out like Ebola, etc.?
The virus is very good at finding children and paralyzing them. We must be better than the virus and finding the children and reaching those children. So having a vaccine is not enough. That vaccine has to be available to everybody. And now that we are down to the very last few places, of course, these are the most difficult places.
Could the 24th October be the last annual day for polio before the disease is eradicated?
Eradication is one stop on the train. Once we stop the transmission of polio, we have to change trains for another series of, you know, checking and verifying that we have stopped it. But we are in the best place ever to get there because we have the fewest cases, only 27 cases this year. In any disease, 99.9% decrease is a cause for success, is a cause for celebration. We have the fewest cases in the fewest places on Earth right now.
And have politicians and policymakers done enough to support your initiatives, aimed at totally eradicating polio?
We have been very fortunate. The Global Polio Eradication Initiative, which was the vision of Rotary International, was embraced by every single government in the world. So that is a huge statement of political support. We have had incredibly generous donors, engaged governments right now in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria. The head of state monitors progress against polio. We have had generous and sustained donors, starting with individual Rotarians to governments and private foundations. Right now, all we need is $1.3 billion more for a program that will forever erase this disease, that will deliver savings of about $50 billion by the time the program is over, and that is helping 15 million people walk today who would have been paralyzed by polio otherwise.
I was speaking to the spokesperson for polio eradication at WHO, Shona Barry. Still on health matters, in Ghana, community health mobilizers are worried about children suffering from cerebral palsy being abandoned by their parents. Cerebral palsy is the abnormal development of the brain that occurs while a child's brain is still developing before birth, during birth, or immediately after birth. Most parents in Ghana choose to abandon or discriminate children born with this disorder because of lack of awareness. However, Efforts are now being made by the health workers to mobilize for government funding and create awareness in order for parents to take care of the affected children instead of abandoning them. Isaac Alich in Accra met some parents of children with cerebral palsy and sent this report.
I met Hannah Awaji in Accra as she interacts with her fellow journalists in the newsroom. Hannah is now happy, but months ago, she was depressed. She talks about the moment she gave birth to a baby girl with cerebral palsy condition.
I have a daughter with cerebral palsy. Initially, it was very depressing. Depressing in the sense that you see everybody's child walking and yours not walking. Your child can't communicate to you the way you feel she should communicate to you. It was very depressing.
Dr. Genevieve Insadu, a pediatrician at the Kolebo Teaching Hospital, explained to me the known cause of cerebral palsy.
Infections that mothers acquire during pregnancy can affect the baby. Sometimes when the baby is being born, if there's delay in the birth process, it can cut off blood supply to the brain, and that can also lead to cerebral palsy.
Because there is no cure yet for the condition, Dr. Insadu is concerned about the implications for the survival of such children.
It's not communicable. You can contract it from somebody else. But once the brain is damaged, that's it. We have support systems. There are drugs, there are therapies that can be offered, but you can't cure it.
Ghana's health ministry estimates that one out of 300 children in Ghana suffers from cerebral palsy. Parents are now calling for government support because of the stigma their children suffer. Some parents often choose to abandon their children, but not Hannah Awaji. She is now running a campaign to advocate the rights of such children.
Only problem is that we still have challenges in our society in terms of getting to understand this. Even many educated people keep their children indoors, but in the rural areas, it's very rampant. There are many people very frustrated to the point of giving up on their children and seeing them die.
Hannah Awaji is hopeful she can for many years provide the best of health care for her child, but she is concerned many parents will continue to abandon their children if the government doesn't step in and provide the necessary funding. For now, one can only hope that her campaign will reach as many parents as it can. Perhaps many lives will be saved.
Isaac Leji in Accra with that report.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Now, Darfur region in Sudan could be the worst place for a woman to live, even though efforts have been made to promote women rights in Africa. This is because in recent times, the Janjaweed militia often raid villages in Darfur to kill, loot and rape women, among other human rights abuses. It is against that background that the Darfur Women Action Group organized the fifth symposium to discuss the magnitude of genocide in Darfur and its impact on women. Before we came on air, I spoke to Niamat Ahmadi, the president of the Darfur Women Action Group, and she started telling me what was discussed at the symposium.
Some of the issues we discussed are genocide and its impact on women. We also discussed women's resilience in the face of genocide, how these women, even though they have been victimized, how resilient and courageous they are to stand up and speak up on behalf of their families and keep their families together. We also discussed accountability for crimes committed against women and the crimes of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. We also discussed how we can strategize and build effective strategies to prevent, to end the existing genocide and be able to have a tool that can help us prevent the upcoming genocide, and how to hold the leaders accountable, like the United Nations Security Council, individual leaders of different countries, especially those who have committed and ratified some of the international norms and frameworks that calls for protection of the rights of women and also the Genocide Convention and the Rome Statute. We want to hold these leaders accountable to their commitment to this instrument.
And what is life like for women in Darfur?
The life in Darfur is the most dangerous place Darfur today, a place where you will to be a woman. It is very dangerous. And that is why, because the rape has been used as a weapon of war, it continues to be a systematic tactic of devastation and dehumanization of women and destruction of families in Darfur. Women have been raped in masses, and young children, school girls and children as young as 7 years old have been taken from the back of their mothers and have been raped. So it is unbelievable that a situation like Darfur can be in our world today and continue for over 13 years.
And how does your organization help these women to rebuild their lives after going through such traumatic experiences?
Well, first, our organization is Speak Up for Women and bring their issues to the first front of the decision makers. Attention, and we do also practically help women to receive training, provide them community-based trauma counseling and psychosocial support, and we give training to women so that they can develop some survival mechanism to be able to earn some level of income and to be able to have prepare them to have access to justice. And also to train them and build their capacity to empower them to be part of decision-making so that they can decide for their own future.
Niamat Ahmadi from the Darfur Women Action Group. To Nigeria now, where young children in Akwa Ibom State in the Niger Delta region are becoming victims of circumstances surrounding a practice created by evangelical pastors where they are branded as witches and wizards. The children branded as such are often abused, abandoned, or even killed. Our correspondent in the Niger Delta region, Mohamed Bello, who visited a center in Eke Town in the state of Akwa Ibom, where a good Samaritan is taking care of the vulnerable children, tells us more.
Children and babies accused of being witches or evil by society in Akwa Ibom State are being tortured and more often killed. In a bid to save them, a charity group known as Child's Right Rehabilitation Network is now giving them care and hope for the future. I visited a center where these children are kept and spoke to Elizabeth Itoma, who manages the center.
We get these children from different places, like open markets, stalls, bush. You know, some of these kids, when they are abandoned, they try to find out themselves. Some they cook in the bush. Some they stay around the primary school building. So after the school, they can come out and play around. You see them. And when we get them, we report to the station, police station, and there we bring them to our center here. And we care for them, we give them medical attention. You know, some sustain so much injury.
Jenny Edith Tukun is 15 years old. She was abandoned by her parents after they labeled her a witch. Jenny was able to escape and now lives at the center.
When I was in my village, my brother's wife now come and took me to the Lagos. After when she took me to the Lagos, I went to the one church. And the pastor that was preaching, that day was fasting day. And that pastor come and called me out and he said that I'm a witch. So my brother's wife now took me to my village and come and said it to everybody. Everybody now afraid of me and they wanted to kill me. So my mother brought me here to come and stay.
Currently, the center is home to at least 20 children who are being given a new lease of life.
Mohamed Bello with that report. And now it's the time of the week where you sit down, relax, and enjoy another segment of Crime Fighters, a Learning by Ear production.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Crime Fighters, Click on the Link. In the last episode, Nina, one of Zawadi's classmates, was suspected of having information about the stabbing,
but nobody has seen her for days. The police are now trying to establish her whereabouts. Today's episode is entitled Searching for the Truth. And we join Candy, Zawadi's best friend, and Kilele, another classmate. They've both been summoned to the police station, but don't yet know why. Let's find out.
Candy, Kilele, the reason we asked you two to come in is because you've both been forthcoming with information so far. Have any of you seen your classmate Nina lately?
Nina hasn't been to school the last few days.
But she doesn't usually attend all the classes.
That's true. Why? Is she in trouble?
No. We just think she may have some information for us. Have any of you talked to her on the phone or by text?
Yes. Nina and I messaged each other on Twitter. She wanted to come with me to visit Zawadi at the hospital when she gets back.
Gets back? From where?
She said she was staying over at her friend's because they had parties to go to.
Parties to go to? Where does this friend of hers live?
At the hostel near the school.
Candy and Kilele, thank you for cooperating with us again.
Thank you, Officer Beso.
Candy, I need to speak with you privately. Kilele, if you like, you can head back to school now.
Okay.
Candy, I'd like you to take us to where Nina is staying.
Of course, Officer Beso. I have a request, though.
What is it?
I'd like to visit Matu, Zawadi's boyfriend. Last time I was here, I was told I had to get clearance from the officers in charge of the case. Can I visit him?
All right. You can see him for 5 minutes, but not today. Maybe tomorrow or the day after. I'll let you know. And you'll have a guard in there with you to be on the safe side. For now, I'm going to call my partner and we'll all go to look for Nina at her friend's place.
And my location is... the Mawatu Central Police Station.
Sorry,
sir. I didn't see you.
These smartphones are taking our eyes off the things that matter. Are you all right? Or should I ask, is your phone okay?
We are both all right. Thanks. I'm Kilele.
Hello. I am Tembo. Are you looking for someone here at the police station?
No, I was just leaving. I came with my friend Candy, but she's still in there.
Oh, okay. I see you are engrossed in your phone.
Ah, yes. I'm on this social media site called Twari. I was just checking in my location.
Come with me. I'd like to show you something about that phone.
Sure. My classes don't start till midday. Plus, I can take a selfie while I'm here.
To post on Twari?
Now you're getting it.
People put up so much information online. Do you understand that anyone can see your information?
Not anyone, just my friends on Twari.
If I searched your name right now, are you sure I won't find you on the search engine?
Of course you won't find me. Twari is very private.
Look.
Hey, that's me. Are we friends on Twari?
No, but this is what I was just telling you about. Once you've created an online profile on one of these pages, anyone... even criminals can find you and access all the personal information you post, even without being your friend. Stuff like where you live, where you work, or your school. For instance, your boss can find your Twitter profile and form an impression of who you claim to be online, how you behave in your free time, whether you are someone they'd consider reliable.
But I don't post nasty things. I'm very careful about that. I just post photos of me and my friends having fun, like when we go out. Nothing too personal. Plus, I haven't started applying for jobs yet. I still have a while to go before I finish school.
The internet never forgets. This stuff will all still be searchable in years to come. I have friends who've lost job opportunities just because they had compromising photos or very radical and controversial posts up on social media pages. When they posted them, they didn't think it was that serious. You need to be very careful.
So, Nina, you and I are going to have a little chat.
Officer Beso, why did you bring me here? What did I do?
Nina, why did you try to run when we found you at your friend's place?
I was running because my friend ran, and I wasn't sure why. I promise I haven't done anything.
And why did your friend run? What kind of people are you hanging out with?
Sometimes he smokes pot. That's probably why he ran and...
Right. Well, that's not why you're here. I'd like to find out about a text message you wrote to Zawadi Ketu. It says, "Stop bothering me. I won't do it." What did you mean? Nina, you do realize, don't you, that this looks like a possible motive for stabbing Zawadi?
What? No, I didn't stab Zawadi. I wouldn't hurt her.
So what do these words mean?
Okay. I'll tell you everything. A couple of months ago, I created a fake online profile on Tuari. I found pictures of this cute boy online. So I used those and called myself Zaki. I know Zawadi loves posting information about herself. So I sent her a friend request and she accepted without even asking who I was.
What does this have to do with the text message I asked you about?
I'm getting there. So I pretended to be Zaki. And I got close to her by flattering her and showering her with attention. I liked everything she posted and occasionally I'd comment on her photos and the places she visited.
And then what happened?
Well, she ignored me at first, but I persisted. And before long we started chatting privately. I asked her questions the way a stranger would, like where she was right now and what she was doing. And she got comfortable enough to start telling me personal stuff.
Nina, why would you do that?
I had a crush on her boyfriend, Matu, and I wanted him to break up with her. So I started asking her about her relationship. I'd comfort her every time they argued. Before long, she was coming to me to ask for advice. I told her I would treat her better than Matu did. She was pretty much ready to be my, well, Zaki's girlfriend. I kept sweet-talking her, but she was always quite careful what she wrote. I wanted to take screenshots of our conversation.
What would you have done with those?
Well, at first I was planning to send them to Matu, but then I changed my mind. I decided to let Zawadi know that I had screenshots of her conversation with a stranger online. I threatened to send them to Matu. She begged me not to. So I said I wouldn't if she broke up with Matu.
And why did you, or rather Zake, talk about meeting with Zawadi?
I got carried away with how easy it was to get someone to trust you online. But I swear it was all just a game, Officer Beso. I didn't hurt anyone. I promise.
It's not a game, Nina. Using a false identity to deliberately deceive someone is a very serious thing. You shouldn't be using the internet to harm your classmate.
I'm really sorry, Officer Beso. But there's something else you need to know.
What is it?
A couple of months ago, she came to me to ask if I could lend her some money. She seemed stressed and said she was in a fix, but I didn't have any cash. I asked why she hadn't asked her boyfriend or best friend, and she told me she didn't want too many people knowing about it. And then she kept bothering me about it, and that's when I sent her that message.
Do you know what she wanted the money for?
No. She just told me that she'd made a huge mistake that had cost her her school fees.
Okay, Nina. We'll let you go with a warning. But we are going to be watching you closely. Is there anything else you might have forgotten to tell me?
And so we end this episode of Crime Fighters, Click on the Link, with Nina's confession. But if she wasn't behind the stabbing, who else could have done it? Nina has also revealed that Zawadi might have had money trouble. What did Zawadi need money for? As always, you can listen to this episode again by visiting our webpage, dw.com/crimefighters. And do connect with us by liking our Facebook page. Let us know what you think of this series. Until next time, be well. Crime Fighters.
For headline news and the stories behind the headlines, join DW's Africa Link every weekday at 16 UTC.
And starting this week, you will listen to Learning by Ear every Wednesday and Sunday at 16:50 UTC. You can also enjoy the drama series via our podcast on our page, dw.com/Africa. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.